Hello. All right. I've already been introduced. My name's Jose Rivera. There's my presentation. I'm from Red Hat and recently a Samba team member, relatively speaking. All right. Let's start.
I'm not 30.
What?
I'm not 31.
For the record, or for clarification, earlier today, Jeremy asked people under 30 in the audience to raise their hands. And I was the guy up front that said, can you make it under 31? So, and he said, no, sorry. Okay. Is that? Okay, there we go. So this is me. I've ended up spending most of my time packaging and mostly packaging Samba with little hacking in recent months. And I work full-time for Red Hat, and I kind of talk a lot, especially when nervous. I got about 9-ish years of working with Microsoft protocols. I was hired straight out of college to basically help. I ended up helping write MSCIFS and MSSMB. And I'm about to complete my first year on the Samba team as of like in a day or two, effectively. I've yet to run away screaming, and I've never driven a motorcycle. That was taken when I went to India. All right, looking ahead a bit, we're going to start off with a little bit of history that, given the people I see in this room, I'm just going to blaze through, because there's already been at least a grand total of about 3/4 to a full talk on the history of CTDB, and I'll just focus on why I'm doing what I'm doing. Then we'll go through and see what things I'm doing differently and what needed to change to bring all that about. And finally, we'll do the usual, here's what I have yet to do, here's what I'd like to do, wouldn't it be great if? Alrighty. Quick look over here of some basic terminology for anybody who reads this afterwards. You know, I'm sure we all know what high availability is, failover, active-active, et cetera, TDB, trivial databases. The only one I want to point out is VIPs, virtual IP addresses, just so I don't get this question later. Basically the same notion as public IP addresses in CTDB. All right, Act 1. All right, so we're fairly certain we know why CTDB came about. It was typically common to use implement active-passive solutions for clustering Samba before CTDB came about. And really part of the problem was that most open source storage solutions at the time only offered POSIX semantics, which is a bit of a problem when you want to do SMB. I understand people looked at other, you know, extant database solutions, and really for the types of workloads that Samba was looking for, they just did not meet the performance needs at the time. So here we have CTDB built to do active-active, and it needed to do a number of things that other systems just did not do quite as Samba needed. You know, it needed to maintain a common identity, or help maintain a common identity for all Samba instances, synchronize SMB/Windows metadata, which did not, you know, which Samba took hold of and did not completely share throughout the rest of the system, and of course, cross-node messaging. Goodness, there have been a lot of talks about that today. And it to this day still relies on a shared file system to implement its recovery mechanisms, something that must implement proper POSIX byte range locks, like GPFS or GFS2. In comes CTDB 2.0. The biggest thing about this is that it consolidated a bunch of code that was in disparate maintenance branches. Thank goodness I was around at Red Hat during that, while that transition was happening. It was such a blessing. Thank you, guys. Lots of cool internal stuff like, you know, read-only records, performance optimizations, new test infrastructures, and started the strong push towards modularizing CTDB's various features and functionality. Thank you for that excellent talk, Martin. And just a general huge thanks to both Amitai and Martin for all the work they've done so far, and will continue to do. Where are we going and why am I in this handbasket? Okay. With things being modularized as they are, or starting to be modularized, this facilitates integration into other systems. allowing us to relatively easily turn off components of CTDB that we want other systems to take care of. And, you know, while we're at it, why not integrate some into a fully open source Linux-based clustered environment? Remember who I'm working for. All right, and that's it. Act two. Introducing Pacemaker. Pacemaker is a flexible and extensible high availability resource manager. In this case, a resource is defined via a file essentially called a resource agent. Resource agents can be defined as anything from storage volumes to IP addresses to daemon processes. They can be centrally managed from the command line on any of the nodes in the cluster, or remotely from a node not in the cluster. In addition, Pacemaker also provides automated logging and recovery for failures for both resources and nodes in the cluster. And it's easy to configure. Let's have a look. So here's an example of just, you know, a help message from one of the commands. One of the things I really liked about going into Pacemaker is that they did a big push to try and document as much of their command line as they could on the command line. So I rarely had to do much in the way of internet searches or diving into man pages. So you can just figure out how to use it and control it from the command line. Here we have something a little more dense. These are resource status messages. So down on bottom left there, I have a display of the resources currently active in a cluster. And then I can also, if you'll look in the upper right, show the description of any of those resources. For instance, the CTDB one. And it has a couple attributes, and each resource also has operations you can perform on it, like start, stop, monitor, things like that. And here's a look into the beginning of the CTDB resource agent that I found and started hacking away at because it was missing a couple of things. You can see that it's basically a shell script, and you can define it, you can define your interface by just setting environment variables. I added a couple there, like the CTDB service SMB and NMB to whether you met. Manages Samba, manages WinBind, where you can set it yes or no, and the CTDB tunables to allow you to inject other arbitrary CTDB configuration parameters as needed. Since, dear heavens, I didn't want to write a interface for every single one of those tunables. And this is really tiny, but you can see that it's, you know, it's not awful. It's just shell scripting, which a lot of people tend to know how to do. And really, resource agents rely on a very small number of custom environment variables that are provided by the OCF framework, Open Cluster Framework, I believe is what it stands for. They have, you know, defined return codes. They have they take all the parameters that you've defined for the resource and set them into environment variables. And let's see. Over on the right there, you can see that in the middle, that huge indented chunk is the spot where you actually call the CTDB binary and start her up. And they more or less had to take a bunch of stuff from the existing existing init.d file that comes with CTDB and kind of port it over into Pacemaker. But yes. Yes, I did look into using that, but for the purposes of getting things out the door, I would have had to change a couple more things on the other file. But yes, I saw the wrapper. That's actually where I pulled most of the code that I added into this to fix a few bugs. So thank you. All right, and here we have the actual resource definition. This is what you would type in the command line or put into an executable script to actually define the resource in your cluster based on the resource agent. And you know, it's best I know, it's pretty straightforward. You define a couple parameters like where the heck it is, where your lock file is, the monitor operations you want. And then down at the bottom, that's where things will start getting interesting for you guys, I believe, are the co-location and ordering constraints. Because Pacemaker can, Pacemaker needs to be able to tell the resource when, where, and how it needs to operate. So the second to last line there, the co-location constraint, tells CTDB that it needs to exist wherever the volume that hosts its log file is. Sensible. So if a particular node does not have access to the log file volume, then CTDB can't run. And the last line there tells CTDB that it can only operate, I guess, would be a good word for this, after the CTDB log volume is active. The command line here takes some shortcuts because the full command, you should specify PCS constraint order start CTDB lock clone, then start CTDB clone. But because you type it so often, they just set defaults and hide it from you. So I said easily a few slides back. That's all relative. Clusters are not simple things. Designing, configuring, and administering them does carry some complexity. Cluster Labs, the people behind Pacemaker, have a driving philosophy that they want to maintain a community of RAs, not just maintain the resource agents themselves, but build a community of people who maintain resource agents that are as dumb and simple as possible, because this makes things a lot easier to predict and a lot easier to debug, especially for them. They've also designed Pacemaker so that all of its constraints for ordering and co-locating things are relatively simple logical rules that are usually pretty determinate, that are, if not usually, actually deterministic in how they will, you know, move things around or shut them down. All right, so that was Pacemaker. Now, how do we dial back CTDB so that we make room for Pacemaker to do its thing? Keep calm and just say no. What this means is that configuring it to not do those things is as simple as not configuring it to do those things. So if you don't want it to manage virtual IPs, you don't tell it where there's a public addresses file. CTDB says, oh, I have no idea what my public addresses are. Keep going. Don't tell it to manage Samba. Disables the management of the daemons. Same thing for Windbind. My thanks to Michael Adam for pointing this out and saving me what might have been a week's worth of headache. All right, so we've shut things down in CTDB. Now we need to figure out how to provide those things we just shut down. This is relatively simple. For virtual IP management, Pacemaker has a resource for that. IP adder 2 in this case, because it's the second one. You tell it what IP address it is. You provide some configuration parameters. In this case, I like flushing my routing table when the IP address moves. You tell it how often you want it to monitor it. And the resource stickiness there at the bottom is what says that it doesn't entirely care where it's running so long as the IP addresses are evenly distributed. So if you have multiple IP adder 2 resources, they can move around all over the cluster, but as long as they're as evenly distributed as possible, then they don't really care where they end up. Because, you know, ideally all your nodes are going to be homogeneous software stacks, right? For daemon management, down at the bottom there, for my setup, since they're just, you know, basically system daemons, I grouped SMBD and NMBD as a single grouped resource. In another setup, I also add Windbind into this group. What that does is allow me to treat them as a single resource, and aside from making monitoring them a lot easier, It also allows me to clone them. Cloning in this case means that, all right, this resource will exist on whatever number of nodes I configure, in this case, all of them. And in all those instances, they behave the same, or they sort of provide the same service, as it were. An important thing to note there is where it says PCS resource clone Samba group meta interleave true. If you don't set that one there, then they can't start independent of one another. So that one right there took me about half a week to nail down that one. And then there's the constraints at the bottom. Since we're doing clustered Samba, you want to make sure that Samba is only running where there's CTDB available, and then don't start Samba before CTDB is running, please. So, having done all that, now we can start adding other things, like, I don't know, NFS Ganesha. Remember that logo. Here, yeah, it's just another resource, so we apply a lot of the things we've already learned. You provide some parameters. In this case, NFS Ganesha provides most of its own parameters through a configuration file, which you specify there. And then you clone Ganesha across the cluster, interleave true again. Globally unique in this case, for Ganesha is important because each instance of NFS Ganesha does not fully operate independent from every other instance. So that you set that to false, and then what was that one? Yeah, I don't remember what notify true does, but it fixed something or other that I was dealing with. You can see how dirty the details get sometimes, where you're just like, yes, this fixed something, don't change it. This is what documentation is for, guys. And then similar co-location and ordering constraints, as with other things. All right, so now, just a short demo. Let's see here. All right. Let me see if I can't view profile preferences. Let's see if I can make this a bit smaller and still have it legible. Yeah, okay. That should do for now. All right, so I have my cluster running. It's just a 4-node cluster of VMs on my laptop. And, you know, it's got a name, a bit of status stuff at the top. All my nodes are online, and here's my full list of resources. You can see the clone sets for resources that I've cloned. Down at the bottom there, you can see I have 4 virtual IPs running. The trigger ones, where you see VIP1 trigger, VIP2 trigger, that's a special resource that when it becomes active, it triggers Ganesha's NFS grace period. So I did try to, you know, because I like clean status messages, I did try to condense that as much as possible, and this is about as much as was possible. I tried to, you know, clone the IP addresses because IP adder 2 has a mechanism for just saying, all right, I'm going to clone this X many times, and each instance and each clone has a unique IP address. That sounds easy. No, it's not. All right. So then I go here, find this one, and we just turn it off. Now I wait a bit. 4, 5, 6, 8. Come on. Die on me. How about? Are you dead? Yes, you're dead. There we go. All right. So it took a while, but it finally detected it was offline. And it scrolled away. All right, hold on. Profile preferences. Hopefully you'll still be able to read it now. All right. So you can see down at the bottom that Oh, and CTDB has failed. Yeah. All right. So we can see at the bottom here that the IP address that was on the node I just shut down, VIP2, has moved to node Hriti. And there's a couple error messages down there, but Pacemaker has noted the error. It's in a log somewhere. You can look at it if you want. And it's in the process of restarting CTDB. Let's see. Samba. All right. Let's have a look here then. If I do this, CTDB status. Disconnected, unhealthy, but it's recovering, so... All right, we're back up, which means that, there we go. All right, CTDB came back. Something happened, it died, banned itself, and then Pacemaker just said, no, it shot in the head. And now it's come back. So then we go over here. Go, there we go. Now this does take a bit. My laptop is pretty snazzy, but it's not quite as snazzy as I'd like. I decided to do 4 nodes instead of my usual 2 because it's slightly more meaningful that way. Oh, it's back online. The VIP has moved, the trigger has hit. A couple things rearrange, and then we wait for CTDB to come back up. Unless, aha. It seems the lock file is not coming back up. What happens? Oop. What happens if I do this? Yep. Oh boy. So it seems we have a file system problem on the node Budi that I just brought back up. But the IP address moved. However, let's see, the IP address moved and then moved again. So you can see now that VIP4 has moved over to node Ganesh because something tried to move back to Budi, but it didn't work. So it reallocated again, and there's no IP address pointing to Budi, which has a failed CTDB on it. And really what it does is has a failed volume, so the log file isn't there, CTDB can't run, Samba can't run. So no IP address there. And it's still going. Now, because you know we don't have all the fancy SMB3 trappings, I can't easily show a demo of just here. I'm copying a gigabyte file. Oh, look, it's still going. But maybe next year or two. All right, shift. No. I'm already mired in this one protocol with this frickin' project. I don't need to go into another one right now. All right, Act 3. Remember TickleX? There's been some talk about him today. This slide should look familiar to some of you. I don't need to go over them in great detail. Basically, from the node you want a client to talk to, you send it a malformed packet. The client says, what the heck, that's wrong, fixes it, and now it's on a new TCP connection to the node you want it to talk to. Really clever stuff, especially, I thought it was neat when I first learned about it. So TickleX, since CTDB isn't doing the IP failover anymore, it's not sending the TickleX. However, they have been implemented in Pacemaker as a feature of the port block resource agent. And you know the TCP packets in sequence are executed correctly. There's a couple downsides to this, though. It does require a user-specified directory to track active TCP connections. And this can either be a shared directory on some sort of shared file system or a local directory that is synchronized via something like, you know, CSync2 or rsync. And it determines active TCP connections via periodic calls to netstat. But by default, about once every 10 seconds. Yeah, Amitai, I'm seeing your face over there. Yeah, that's about the face I made.
That's good, because we also do the same thing for NMS.
Yeah, but it's not what you do for Samba. No. Right. So I was thinking, is there a better way to do this? I delve into the CTDB code, figure out how they do it, and then thought, is there a way I can do this so that everybody can benefit from the Tickle-Lack and also do it in user space? Well, Netfilter, the people who brought you IP tables, have made Contract, a set of stateful packet inspection tools for IP tables. And one of the tools that comes with is Contract D, the contract daemon. Instances of Contract D can keep IP table state of other nodes. That's the key part here. So Contract D daemons can read the state of their own IP tables, and then they can send it off to other peer nodes of Contract D. Obviously, you can filter which connections you want to track, because tracking all TCP connections on a high traffic server, no thank you. And the cool thing is, which might not be entirely relevant to what I'm trying to do, but it's still cool, is that the remote state that you're collecting can be programmatically or event-driven, be dumped into the local IP tables so that now your firewall knows the entire TCP state that the other node had when it died, roughly. Crazy stuff. Now, current synchronization mechanisms are what they advertise as soft real-time asynchronous replication protocols. They have about 3 or 4 replication methods for distributing all these for distributing all this information, and they provide various trade-offs between reliability of the replication and how much bandwidth they use and how much chatter they generate. But I figured, you know, it's worth a shot. So I'm looking at first trying to bringing port block in to do the Tickle-Lack before I start trying to write my own. In particular because, you know, these guys did it, works well enough, so give it a shot, see what production says. I should probably specify, the reason it's called port block is because the resource agent was initially created to be paired with the IP adder 2 resource agent so that, much like what CTDB already does, it blocks all the ports via calls to IP tables when the IP address moves, and then you configure logic rules to tell it when to unblock, like say when the services behind those ports are now running again. And for some reason they threw Tickle-Lack in there as a configuration parameter. Okay, why not? I guess they were looking really closely at CTDB when they designed that. Deterministic virtual IP address failover and failback. There is some demand for this because at the moment it's not entirely humanly deterministic where an IP address will move when things happen. So there are various games you can play with the constraints in Pacemaker to specify, yes, I prefer this one node over all other nodes, but depending on how things occur, I will fail over to, you know, node 1 or node 2 or node 3 in that preferred order, and then circle around back to node 0 if all the other nodes are unavailable, and all sorts of things you can do. And then a robust CLI and configuration parameters. I want to, you know, similar to what Martin talked about earlier today, I want to provide a good structure of verbs and nouns to be able to take this daunting task of tossing up a cluster and make it slightly more accessible. And maybe even provide some, you know, for packaged products, maybe provide some simple commands with minimal configuration so that you can just, in like 2 commands, boom, you have a cluster. And just bring all that up. Yeah. All right. Longer term, what if? So I figure I want to manage the storage volumes that all this relies on. At the very least, I want to be able to monitor their status. Currently, Pacemaker has some issues with both with the file systems I've worked on, namely, you know, Gluster and GFS2. It doesn't quite get things correctly, and then if you try to go into the realm of starting, in the case of Gluster, at least, if you try to go into the realm of starting and stopping or mounting and unmounting, then things get really weird real fast. So that's on my back burner, but still would be nice. Do a new Tickleack implementation, as I mentioned, and possibly move it into its own resource agent. So you can, you know, there's no reason to say you only need Tickleax when you're blocking a port. Maybe do it in its own resource agent. Maybe if we want to say, you know, if there's really no need for Tickleax outside of an IP address movement, maybe put it into IP adder 2, a new IP adder 3. And then remove the need for a shared file system from CTDB. That would simplify my life greatly. Maybe use Unix datagram sockets? I don't know. Just a thought. What about SMB3 continuous availability? Hi, guys. All right. That's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jose. Are there questions or remarks, comments on this talk? Yes, Amitay?
I'm watching you.
Can you go to the previous slide? So we recently implemented a mechanism where CTDB can be run with external IP failover mechanism.
Yeah.
And with that, you get tickles for free.
Yeah. I've been considering that. My main thing, though, is that do I want to, you know, do I really want to tell the administrators that if you want TickleX for NFS or anything else, you must have CTDB installed? I mean, I could, sure. But what if I didn't have to? What if it's just Pacemaker can provide that because there's a resource agent for it? And, you know, if it proves to be daunting enough that I just don't want to replicate that work, sure, you need CTDB for TickleX. But might as well try. Over there.
Thanks. So, but generally, I mean, the thing that Amitay is proposing would be most useful for SMB because currently Samba registers its connections with CTDB, so that would essentially be for free. You are completely right that for NFS it wouldn't give an advantage, and so you would like to implement that with the contract D and so on anyways, but for a start it would be really, really great. But apart from that, I think it's a great project, and I really I can only repeat, I've started like in 2010 sitting down at the Linux Plumbers conference with the Linux HA guys and talking about how to integrate CTDB and Samba, and that plan of doing it this way was there long ago, but it's great that somebody finally does it and proves it's possible. Cool. Woo. Thanks.
Back over there.
This does look good. I guess the only other thing that Samba does, if you're tracking, if you're using its tickle implementation, is that it also kills the Samba daemon that you were connected to. I'm trying to remember exactly where in the code and whether you need the tickle code for that, but that's worth looking at.
Yeah, okay. I'm thinking, you know, stuff like that could probably go into a trigger resource agent, much like I had a virtual IP trigger for the Ganesha grace period. You know, there's nothing to say I can't take that, you know, if I can't take that and, you know, make a new trigger specific for Samba CTDB. You know, the main thing is that they want to keep functionality as separated and dumb as possible. I mean, if it makes sense to just modify the CTDB RA and call that functionality, sure, why not?
Any more Questions? Comments? One more?
Come on, Amitai.
This has nothing to do with CTDB. Just a question on pacemaker. How does pacemaker decide where to fail the IP address? I mean, by default. I mean, you have not implemented anything right now, but it failed to some other node. So how do you determine, and what happens if you have, instead of one IP per node or whatever, let's say you have, 100 IPs?
I don't remember. In general, I did do a setup once where I had a 2-node cluster and 3 virtual IP addresses, and dump one, all 3 go to 1, bring it back up. And I think in all cases, the 2 that moved over would come back to the 3rd one, or would come back to the node that I just brought back up. But I didn't do a whole lot of digging into that, because in general, if your nodes are all identical, it doesn't matter too much. And also, I'm not doing any performance testing just yet.
Well, the problem becomes interesting if you have multiple subnets.
Ooh.
And multiple interfaces.
Multiple subnets and multiple interfaces. Yes. I do believe the IP Adder 2 resource agent has capabilities for defining which interfaces you prefer. But again, that's also going in under the assumption, that's getting even another deeper layer of assumption that your nodes are completely identical, so that ETH0 is configured the same as ETH0 on the other node. Okay, I think that's it. Save me.
Yep, okay. Yes, thank you very much, Jose.